just get started. Thank you. So I'd like to call the November 22nd special meeting of Ways and Means to order. We sort of do this as informal as a workshop meeting. So Legislator Criswell, if you want to start off.
Thank you, Chairman. Everybody hear me? Mm-hmm. Great. Okay. So first off, I wanted to just say thank you for your patience as we kind of work through this new system that we've created for legislative program dollars. I know it's a new way of thinking about it. And I just wanted to say thank you for your patience and also acknowledge that I think I jumped the gun a little bit on three of those items. And I apologize for that. And I certainly want this to go through the right channels and make it go through the correct procedures. So I'm happy that that error was caught and that we're able to regroup and figure this out. So thank you for that. So when we look at this at the sort of 30,000 foot view, it looks like in terms of legislative programs, funding pot, there are certain programs that seem to be always funded and are like guaranteed funded basically, which I know there are no guarantees, but basically they've been funded every year and we've got a commitment as a county to fund those programs. And then there's a whole slew of programs that are not guaranteed at all that we look at. And, you know, there's maybe somebody brings it into to view and we say, yeah, this should be funded this year, and we fund it. So it seems like there's two kind of different types of funding that we're doing. And what I was trying to do with introducing the resolutions to get the three entities funded as I did was just to say, we've always done this funding, let's get this through so that these three groups know what their 2022 budget can look like so that they can do the appropriate hiring that they need to do, that they can budget correctly for their programs and give them a little bit of breathing room. I mean, it's already November, they're already well into thinking what their budgets are gonna be for next year, how many hires are gonna make, what their programs are gonna be. So it would be really unfortunate if they all of a sudden didn't have the funds to be able to do that and had to pull back on their hiring or renege on hiring. So we don't want to be in that kind of position. So that was my thinking in trying to move it forward so that we could just solidify that those programs that we always fund and get the monies out there and make it work that way. And then for the programs that are not always funded, you know, we've gone through this extensive process now of creating a matrix where we're going to evaluate programs, looking at their merits in a more holistic way than I think has been done in the past, which I think is right, because what we want to do is we want to make sure, and I want to nod to John Parity for this, because we worked together on this this idea of, it was actually his word, was the matrix, and then we sort of jumped in and kind of created this document to weigh and evaluate different asks against. And so what our goal, I think, is to really make sure that these dollars have the most impact that they can, as well as look at whether in any specific year we have programmatic goals or vision. So say one year we really say, you know what, we really want to support women-owned businesses this year. And so we're looking at those legislative program dollars to really support women-owned businesses, or say we want to support the BIPOC community this year in a much larger and much more intentional way. And how can we take those dollars and put them to play in that? So I think that this new way of looking at the legislative program dollars pot is actually going to serve our community in a more intentional way that it's done in the past. And so that I just wanted to give you sort of the overview of what my thinking was, and I think members of the Legislative Programs Committee as well. And I'm happy to take questions or talk through these amendments if you have them.
Anybody have any questions for Legislator Criswell? Legislator Walter?
Thank you. So thank you, Legislator Criswell. You know, this came up in our last Ways and Means meeting. The only question I have, well, I have two questions. One is, one of the pieces of the conversation was also on whether, since this is going to be annual, does it, and because soil and water and like Cornell Cooperative definitely fall under environment, like, should they should they go under those particular departments instead and then be viewed by those committees as funding, just like how DSS has contract agencies that it sees under DSS and then it goes through public health, or, you know, so one, I'll just ask both of them and then you can, I'll leave it to you, is.
And let me answer that question.
Oh, sure, okay.
Yeah, yes, is that my answer, my short answer. I think it makes a lot of sense. Why not have the committee of jurisdiction be the one that actually has the knowledge content? You know, they know the questions to ask. And so, yes, absolutely have it be evaluated by the correct committee.
No problem. But I guess it's also not just evaluated, but that then instead of going to miscellaneous contract others, should it go into the Department of Environment? You know, like, should it go into that department's budget? And then I guess I still have another question, but when I'll go back to it, then the added part to it is it's a little less clear than where library goes. But and I know Tracy has thoughts on this as well.
Well, to me, libraries is squarely in legislative programs because that's actually in the mission of the committee. If you read the committee's mission, libraries is right in it. So I would say let's go back and look at what the mission of each of the committees is and align the programs and the program dollars with the committee's mission.
Legislator Bartels.
Thank you. Yeah, I think Legislator Criswell's right in terms of looking at each committee and aligning the goals of each committee with each program, but particularly as it relates to Soil and Water and Cornell Cooperative, and I may be misunderstanding the question a little bit, Legislator Walter, but in terms of putting them into a county department, both of those programs have unique contractual arrangements with the legislative board, with the legislature, and that's by state statute, I believe. Amber's nodding. I mean, organizing the organizational structure of both of those groups. So they require that the contracts be with the legislature rather than with the executive. And so I don't think they would move into departmental budgets, but I think as Legislator Criswell pointed out, it makes sense. And currently Soil and Water is in under the purview of the Environment Committee and has been for at least as long as I've been here.
Legislator Walter.
Thank you. That helps clear it up. I see things like we have Family of Woodstock that kind of goes to DSS and goes to legislative. So I didn't realize those stipulations. So the second part is, and I know it's just put there as backup, but I guess I have concern. Well, I'm not sure if it is. So the second document, which is called funding history, but it breaks out the library, Soil and Water, and Cornell, and then it has remaining funding for 2022. I don't know if you saw that as backup, but my worry is that it actually already lists programs I know that it has to be decided yet, but the visual sort of feels like, and I know it's empty, but it under that idea of what Legislator Parody talked about of blank slate, and that
it's strictly there for historic data. It has nothing to do with how those program dollars will be evaluated or spent in the coming year. So we probably shouldn't have even put it on
there. Right. It's also because it's titled remaining funding for 2022. And so by listing them under that title, as opposed to historic funding prior to 2022, and I know what you mean. I'm just saying it takes knowing what you mean as opposed to just reading what it is. And I get the point of it. If I was a new organization and I saw that, I might feel a little.
Totally. Can we get Amber to speak to that?
What's your next, Amber?
Thank you. I did that as part of the request that I was hearing from the last committee meeting. So Legislator Criswell did not know that I did that and did not request that I do that. So that's not exactly correlating to his budget amendment. It was just something that I thought I was hearing the committee request that I do.
That's
so
fine.
That was on me.
That's fine. And you know, if it just said previous funding, I would have changed it. It was just that word of remaining funding that got me. But thank you. I appreciate it. I didn't know if it was actually considered backup for it or not. So thank you.
Commissioner Criswell.
To me, the real crux of this is what are the things that we are funding every year that we're committed to as a county, marking those as such, and then looking and seeing what is the more malleable amount of funding that we can do different things with each year. That to me is just, when you break it down to its most simple factors.
Legislative parity?
Yeah, first of all, I agree that these two programs in particular are consistently funded and should be. Did I just hear a comment made that by state law, they cannot be included under as a county organization or a county program, that they have to be done this way?
Yeah, Amber or Tracy.
The state statute says that the libraries, Soil and Water, and Cornell Cooperative have specific contractual purposes with the legislature.
So that would preclude them from having specific contractual programs with the legislature, but they couldn't be under the county executive's purview as a funded organization. If that happened, they couldn't have those county contracts, because I really think they should be under the county. We can't let them go, cut them loose, especially the first two. You know, my problem with it is that these two programs in particular don't have any taxing authority, so they have to get their funding through ways like this, appropriations and or program allotments.
That's it, Ron.
Thank you. Just to legislative parity's point, I think that that's the exact reason that this amendment's being put in, is to ensure funding for these organizations, which by state statute are, you know, expected to be appropriated for by the legislative body, and ensuring that they don't get tossed in. Sorry, I'm jostling around a little bit. Ensuring that they don't get lumped in with the other organizations that are going to be vying for the balance of the funding. So I think that legislative parity is correct, and this is, you know, to sort of remedy that.
Anybody else comments? All right, Legislator Criswell, thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to jump off. I have a board meeting I have to prep for. Thank you.
And Peter, thank you.
You're welcome, John. Thank you.
All right. Anybody want to go next? Legislator Archer.
Thank you. In looking at the analysis that was sent out by Amber, we had received it previously, but it was now then sent last week to everyone. There are a number of things that I believe we should seriously talk about. And it relates to the probably anywhere between 10 and 11 million of added staffing expense that we are adding with increases, 62 new positions, overtime pay. Everything is going up, even when we're adding 62 new jobs. And I'm really concerned that we're adding ongoing costs that are going to be difficult down the road to right size. It worries me that we learned a lot through the pandemic, how technology can help us in some regards, and I don't necessarily see that really being implemented here. As I said, we're adding 62 new jobs. That's over $3.7 million that, you know, is going to fall on our shoulders, with the exception of maybe 500 of that, which will be part of DSS. But it's taxpayer money. We've increased overtime and time where I'm not quite sure why we're even in the pod seeing a significant increase in overtime when, you know, we have more distribution of shots and vaccines than we've had in the previous 2 years. So there's a number of things here that give me tremendous pause. There's not been sufficient support and understanding and documentation as to why we're adding all of this, both salary, overtime, and new positions. And I would recommend, Chairman, that we at least start with anything over 3%. And we have that, I think it's on page 4 in the report from Amber, and just go through it department by department and ask those present if they can just help us to understand why we've got the recommendations before us, because some of this is going to be ongoing expense that's not going to be easily gotten rid of.
Chris?
This is Bert. I just wanted to comment in terms of the $11 million increase in payroll. Remember, CSEA received almost a 9% increase for the 2022 budget, and that included additional salaries for DPW, which was on top of the 9%. We did add $5.25 to their rates. One of our bigger departments that have overtime is DPW. So those rates get applied to the overtime as well.
But that's not everything, Bert. Can you break it down for us? Could you break down what the overall contract settlements were, what that impact is? I mean, it's still, we still have significant money.
My thing is most of the contracts were 9%. In terms of UXIA was even 9% that it was just adopted by the legislature. CSEA was 9%. Management was only a 3% for next year. That was it.
And where does new positions fit into that?
New positions would get the same increase in terms of the amounts. I don't have the amounts of those 60 positions. I can get it. I know I have it here somewhere.
I still think we should look at the 3%. We should look at some of it. So are you saying the increase in overtime?
A lot of your increase in overtime, your two biggest departments are corrections and DPW. They all received significant increases when it came to union rates. So their overtime, I have to apply the rates to their overtime as well.
And part-time pay?
It's the same thing when it comes to the corrections officers, because they have part-time pay. They receive those same increases.
And what about emergency communications?
While they're on this list that was provided, the three deputies, we had severe compression issues with the 9% to emergency service dispatchers for making more than the deputy of 911.
Well, I think we should go through each one of them. That's my recommendation.
Absolutely. No problem.
Legislator Walker.
Sorry. And also, we're kind of jumping back and forth between part-time pay and 3%. So I don't know if we want to start with the part-time pay and then do the 3% or the other way around. But I feel like or the other, because so I don't know which one you want to start with, Lynn or anyone else.
I'm open. I just think we should be talking about it, and we should understand why these numbers are increasing pretty significantly.
So if we start with part-time pay, just because it's on the page first, I would like to understand what happened with emergency communications, because it went from 111,000 to 612,000.
I can speak on the part-time pay and emergency communications. That's for our continued pod volunteers. They're still getting paid to be volunteers.
So can you just explain, dumb it down for me?
Yeah.
Just what $500,000 difference looks
it
like.
It wasn't budgeted in the 21 budget, Legislator Walther. So we had to increase it for the pod volunteers in 2022. It wasn't there. If you look at the amended budget right now, there's probably, bear with me.
Okay. And while you're looking, I'm not suggesting it's something wrong. I just want to understand what it
is. I just wanted to give you the information. I right now I have almost $600,000 in an amended budget for pod volunteers for 2021. So I had to budget for it in 2022. They're still working for us.
So, but help me to understand why you're budgeting at the same level when we were last go around, it was multiple shots. There's boosters now. I'm just trying to understand. There's a lot more distribution through pediatricians, through doctor's offices, as well as pharmacies. So I'm trying to understand why you're thinking that we're going to be at the same run rate next year as we are this year.
So we actually budgeted less than what we've already spent this year. So it is showing a decrease. We've already spent over $600,000 this year. As you can see, with any of the pod and the vaccine activities, the county has taken the lead. The state has closed their pod in Ulster County. So we're one of the only mass locations that are able to be open multiple hours. If anyone's tried to get it through their provider for either pediatrician or other, not all of them are doing it, especially pediatricians. So those are getting pushed to the county as well. Local departments of health are taking the lead on this. And that's in coordination with the state, but we are certainly going to be active this year and into next as boosters and vaccinations continue. To what extent? We don't know. Just like with everything else with the pandemic, that has been a shifting target. If they approve more boosters, then we have to be prepared to do more.
And there's no county cost to this, as we're using ARP funds for it, which is budgeted as well. There's $500,000 in federal aid in this department.
All right, Legislative Bartels, then Ronk, then Walter, did you have your hand up again? No, okay, so Legislative Bartels, then Ronk.
Legislator Archer asked my question, I'm okay.
Okay, thank you. Legislator Ronk.
Thanks, I just, I don't know if it sounds ridiculous to anybody else, but it sounds ridiculous to me to continue to call them volunteers when we're talking about spending $500,000.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree with that too. And I'll just say, you mentioned pediatricians not being able to, or regular PCPs giving out the shots. I don't know what other areas are like, but around here you can go to Walmart or Walgreens. I mean, you literally walk in and get them, the boosters. It doesn't take any time at all. I mean, there's probably a good reason why the state closed their pod, because everybody's doing it, or at least there's a good amount of flexibility in where people can go. I mean, having it, and I agree with Legislator Ronk, calling the volunteer that gets paid isn't really a volunteer. But Legislator Archer?
Yeah, that's to the point I made earlier. We have a wider distribution net. What are your numbers been? I get that you're looking at it just purely based on what you've spent year to date in 2021, excuse me. So what are you anticipating? How many people have been through the pods? How many sessions have you had? I mean, I'm just trying to understand. I would assume you looked at all of that when you were trying to determine the budget, correct?
That's correct. If you want specific stats regarding vaccinations, I'm sure we can contact the health department and get that.
Well, you didn't use that when you were making your decision on how to budget for next year?
No, I actually said that I acknowledged that, yes, we did when we were formulating the budget. But I think if you're looking for specifics on looking forward, what we expect next year, that's more of a health department question. But of course, any decision we make regarding what we put in the budget is vetted with the departments that are in charge of these areas. And based on our experience, we've run vaccinations to this point with assistance from the state, with assistance from the providers at Walgreens or Rite Aid, but we've certainly taken the lead and have distributed more than them and will continue to.
Walter?
So, and maybe you don't have the answer, maybe whoever else does, but is the assumption then that the extent of the delivery of these vaccines will be at the same level as it is right now all year?
So we budgeted less than we have already spent to date through three quarters this year. So we budgeted next year. So we do anticipate that it will be less since much of the population is already vaccinated. But I think as we can see with the evolution of who gets boosters, when they get boosters, who's eligible, that's been a moving target. You know, there's time recently we've heard reports where there could be a fourth dose coming for immunocompromised in short order. So we're trying to do our best with the best available information, which is right now that we have, and while we formulate the budget, to anticipate these expenses. Last year, we didn't have all of that information. We didn't have all of that experience because the pod had just opened in January. We started a trickle in December, and then we fully opened in January, and we've done thousands. So we're trying to project out with the best available information where we're going to be next year.
Bartels, then Walter, then Archer.
Thank you. So Amber just shared with us in the chat that the pay in the vaccine pod through 1122 is $378,175. So can you explain that discrepancy since the number that you have is somewhere around six?
I got it. Wait. Yeah. Actually, that's what the budget number is. Right now, I have $402,000 of expenses.
So where's the six that you're referencing?
It's what we had budgeted. We did move money in there. I won't need the full six probably towards the end of the year, although they're getting paid monthly. So it's going to be close to that $500,000 we have budgeted, at least.
Okay. So right now, the budget is basically matching what you anticipate expenses are, not less than
this year's. Okay.
Walter? Maybe, I think it would be helpful to get some numbers just to see how many people we served in the early days of the pandemic and of the opening of the pods when there was long wait lists and long lines moving to now, where I know that we're vaccinating hundreds, if not thousands of people with the addition of children, but it would be helpful to see some of those numbers and also to get a sense so that we can project out and understand how you arrived at these estimates.
All right, we can do that. I'm reaching out now.
Thank you. Senator Walker.
I'm gonna pass for a minute.
All right, Senator Archer.
Legislator Bartels addressed my question.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, that would be mine as well. I think the stats would be very helpful to see because I have a hard time believing that we're anywhere near what we were seeing in the beginning of this. So it'd be good to see that going forward. All right, Legislator Archer, you want to continue on the line there? You're on mute.
Yeah, sorry. Anybody else have any other questions? I mean, I'm seeing our part-time pay going up $1 million. In aggregate, can you just kind of speak to why you think we're moving in that direction?
Again, you had the $500,000 for the pod, $100,000 increase in the sheriff's department with union contracts. We do have additional monies for part-time for Earl Herring in terms of the public defender's office. But between the pod and the sheriff, $600,000 right there.
Is there an easy way for you to tell which of these are contractually related increases and which are actually increase in more, you know, additional labor hours?
Well, when it comes to part-time, quite a few of the departments budget a bucket for part-time. But when it comes to like the correction officers, because of the new union contract, they're going to get paid at a higher part-time rate. So we had to apply that to the kind of that bucket of money.
I understand. I'm trying to differentiate between an increase in salary versus increase in labor hours.
I think the biggest difference in part-time pay is the $500,000 for the pod.
I'm sorry, say the last part again.
For the pod paid staff,
but the rest of these that are increased, such as the DA, the sheriffs, board of elections.
now you're jumping to the 3% list. I was just talking part-time pay.
No, I'm talking about part-time pay. It's on here as well.
But the DA in terms of salaries, they have staff that are management that are benefited that are part-time. They got a 3% raise.
Bert, that's what I'm actually asking. Yeah. Is it just an increase in salary that's causing the increase, or is it an increase in number of labor hours in that department?
In the DA's office,
pretty much all of them. I'm trying to figure out, looking at this list, which is a result of an increase in salary versus an increase in usage of that staff.
On part-time pay.
And you're looking at part-time pay?
Yes. Page 3.
Hold on.
In the meantime, I'll go to Sheriff Figueroa.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I'd like to explain a little bit on what's going on in corrections. As you know, the court system has shut down. There have been no misdemeanor trials. We just started having trials in county court. Last year was a unique year, including this year. We had a hiring freeze last year. We had an incentive to retire last year that decimated the ranks in corrections. No one's taken a test. We had to hire people provisionally. Even now, we're well below the 10% threshold for minimum staffing levels at the jail. I even made a deal where we defunded 10 positions last year that total over $1 million. That's why there was such an increase in overtime for part-timers. It's just been an ongoing issue here until we get what we think are regular numbers here at the Ulster County Jail. People think that no bail means no jail. The courts aren't open and they have not been sentenced. Right now we're averaging at about 150 inmates. When I first took office, it was 270. At one point it was 99. So the numbers that we're looking at are not your true numbers here. And because of that, we've been suffering with staffing issues here at the county jail. And that's why the part-time numbers have been going up.
So just let me make sure I understand what you said, Sheriff, that this essentially, the increase there is because of the lack of staffing in full-timers.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
To include the new
salary.
Correct.
Yes, I understand, thank you. Anybody else comments? Okay, I guess we can move on then to the 3%.
Can we just, before we go there, can we try to understand the overtime pay, particularly because I know overtime was heavily used in 2020 and 2021, and we're now seeing another jump in the 22 budget. And Bert, if you can kind of help us understand, you know, the rationale, what the thinking is here.
Now, was that provided in the yes. review as well?
Yeah, I believe so.
I'm looking at the four pages under personnel review. There's no overtime.
Amber, this is the personnel cost comparison where it's highlighting year over year changes in regular pay, part-time pay, overtime, and contractual. You know what I'm talking about? Did that go out to these guys?
That was not distributed to the committee. I can.
I think it would be helpful.
Okay.
What I'm showing here, Bert, just before you get it, is in 2019, our adopted budget, our overtime pay was rounding out 3.2 million. In 2020, it was 3.4. In 2021, it was 3.4. And it's for 2022, and I thought those were the heavily used. In 2022, it's a 4 and change.
Yeah, I'm running my own report. One second, please.
Okay.
So in 2019, our actual was $3.9 million.
In the 2022 budget, I have $4 million in overtime budgeted. That is with union contracts, with staffing. The biggest departments of those $4 million, highway is $1.2 million of the four. And give me a second.
Okay.
Going backwards. And the jail is $1.5 million. So between two departments, it's almost $3 million, $2.7 million.
And that's on track from previous years?
Yeah. Actually, I think the sheriff explained with his vacancies and things, he's probably going to go over the $1.5 million this year.
So in 2019, we exceeded the budget. In 2020, what did we end up with? Because I'm looking at the adopted. I'm not looking at actual.
In the 2020 budget, I have $3.6 million as the actual.
And we had budgeted 3.4 then.
Yes, and we budgeted 3.4 last year, or this year, sorry, 2021. I don't know what year I'm in.
So you budgeted 3.4. What are we running at?
I gotta add a column.
Please. That's all right. This is helpful.
Yeah. Right now I have 3.7.
So every year we're running under. There's a pattern here, Bert. Why?
We're not running under, we're running over the budget.
I mean over, excuse yeah. me, you're right.
Well, I think, Lynn, a lot of it has to do with first vacant positions. Instead of filling those positions, as the sheriff mentioned, he's using overtime to cover or part-time to cover. And I'm not just zeroing on the sheriff. I think at DPW, it's the same thing. I will say with the new contract, they should be able to hire more when it comes to positions at DPW. But even if they're hiring, I can't predict the weather either when it comes to DPW.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, you know, the $4 million, it's only a projection. It may be, we may go over next year. We find the money internally to get there if need be. I will say a lot of the overtime this year too is due to COVID.
So and some of that's going to get covered, right? We're going to get reimbursed on some of that.
Yes, we are. But so, I will say that's another thing that's brought the overtime numbers up too is people are working more than 80 hours in the payroll.
So help me then, if I look at regular pay on this report, which you now should have, can you just give me, because I would expect that we would see a dip down in regular pay if this overtime is due to not filling jobs, correct?
But the contracts have increased it.
Right.
We've settled union contracts, which are going to negate that.
But you're looking at.
I'm looking at previous years, though, yeah, so no. That's not relevant.
You're looking at actuals to budget.
Yeah.
Agreed. So in 2020, you have to remember, well, 2020's overtime was pretty on par with budget. You have to remember COVID too. I keep saying that.
Right. It was 200,000 over adopted. Yeah, but what was regular pay?
$74.8 million.
Okay. And what about for 2019? What was actual?
74.5.
Okay, so that didn't play out there, and there was a big change there. What about where are we at now? What's our run right now for 21?
Yeah, I just added two more columns to this report that gets bigger and bigger. Give me a second.
Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. So in 2019, I just wanted to bring up the adopted budgets. Our regular pay, we had a $2.1 million savings in regular pay.
You were budgeted at 74.5, and that's
not in my adopted budget. I had $77.7 million in regular pay.
That was on 2019. That was the adopted. No, that's not what I have, Bert.
You got 74.
I have 74.5.
Yep.
A run rate for this year?
2019, okay. I had $74.5 million in regular pay.
I'm sorry, say that again, Bert.
$74.5 million in regular pay.
For 2019?
Yeah. I only spent 70.5. I'm looking at the actuals right now.
Okay, so the actual for 2019 is 70.5.
So we had vacancies and thus use it overtime.
Got it. And what is our run rate to date?
And 2020 is the same thing, Lynn. I had 70.
Yeah, I see that. I see that. It's trending the way I want, but this is helpful.
Same thing's going to happen in 21 also.
So where are we at today?
I have 72.3 as an adopted budget right now. And trying to think, probably through October, I have $55.3 million. We're going to save money in the budget as well in terms of regular.
Okay. I just wanted to ensure we were seeing a correlation between extended and
Lynn, I can tell you the budget director holds vacancies. I have to approve them. We use this to generate a savings now and then. Let's put it that way.
What's your vacancies running at right now?
There isn't many right now. I can tell you, I estimated this on my fund balance.
Oh, give me a second.
And Lynn, I will tell you though, the regular pay in terms of adopted because of the union contracts, we're not going to have a good comparison from adopted budget to actuals because
it's a contract year. But that happens in every time we have a contract.
I will say not when it's like 7% this year for 21.
Mm. Okay.
Just to make you aware of that too.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Yeah.
And are we seeing a dip in from last year on the retirement side due to the long tenured folks that took the package?
Actually, I will say in terms of retirements, there were some folks who were waiting for a new union contract. They got it. Mm-hmm. So they have retired too. So besides the retirement incentive, we have had a few folks retire, not the normal kind of year. Yeah.
They wanted all that back pay.
There you go.
Okay. Those are the questions I have. Thank you.
Yeah.
Ready to move on to 3%? Okay. Listen, Archie, you want to go through line by line?
I think we should go through each of the groups according to, you know, what's on this page, on page 4, and just ask, starting off with the DA to talk about some of these increases from what was submitted. I assume the 2022 AMBER recalc is the 3%. And then this is the recommended executive's recommendation. So we can just understand. I know we've talked about this, Dave, over the last couple of meetings, but if you could just kind of walk us through quickly, that'd be great.
Sure, sure. Happy to do that. And just like the sheriff, I just want to give you a little overview of what's been going on. My office is still understaffed after the almost 2 years. Hopefully at the end of this month, for the first time, we'll be fully staffed, which I'm really looking forward to. We were attempting to staff throughout this year once we had the hiring freeze lifted. And in the salary ranges that we had, and I just reported that when I spoke with the executive about the fact that we were unable to hire anyone except someone at our lowest level who are just coming out of law school. So that we are underpaid here, and we have been underpaid for a while. At the same time, and I've talked to you about this, our caseloads have tripled as a result of court closures. So during the 9 months that courts were closed, we had 70 to 100 cases coming in every week. The cases went nowhere except onto the caseload. You know about our discovery burdens right now. So all of that has made the job of every ADA in my office that much more difficult. Every one of them is probably working 50 to 60 to 70 hours a week right now. So what I did was restructure our office to make it workable under the caseload workload that we have right now, which is adding some management positions. All of these positions that you're seeing are positions where people have basically been promoted to a higher level of working. We have people who were in justice courts before who are now taking on felony caseloads because we have a 2,000 felony caseload right now, which is double what it's ever been before. We have people who are taking on very important issues. So you know about our IPVI, our Intimate Partner Violence Intervention Program, which we're trying to expand throughout the entire county. So we have ADAs who are involved in that and also taking on special victims work. So we've created a senior level of management for those attorneys. And that's the highest level we have here, 103 right now. And that number actually has allowed us to hire one person over the last 6 months who is who has experience of 10 years or more working as a DA. We had no one else showing up with experience in any of the levels below that. I've talked about this before. The majority of ADAs over in Dutchess County make between $120,000 and $150,000. The Saratoga just hired people right out of law school for $90,000. In order to retain our staff and in order to at least have an opportunity to hire new staff, these salaries are absolutely necessary. And really, as I say, it's the best bang for the buck you'll ever get. The number of hours these ADAs put in for the increases that they're getting is ridiculously high. So if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Anybody have any questions? Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Public defenders. That's a small increase.
Mm-hmm.
Department of Finance.
Wait, can we just understand? I mean, I actually was surprised that it was covered by Harrell Herring, but maybe Bert, can you speak about?
It was budgeted last year to be funded partially by Harrell Herring. They've now moved that funding to other staff.
Okay, that's I just wanted to understand how that worked.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, that was last year. That
yeah, I didn't think it ever funded. Was. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I guess we'll skip down to budget and innovation.
I believe I did talk to this committee October, I believe, 16th, and mentioned the whole kind of budget innovation. We're all on alternative work schedules in the 2022 budget. As you saw the change in the budget this year, I intend to continue that and revise the capital program, which is in a much needed work. So yeah, it's just more staff hours is needed to get that accomplished. And maybe someday we can get an award on our budget.
Legislator Bartels.
So I need to understand this a little better. So alternative work schedules, as I'm looking at these five positions, we're talking about some management positions. So can you explain to me what the hours are, and because these are significant raises, it looks like.
Yeah, confidential secretary is 37 and a half. The financial analyst, deputy budget director are 40 hours a week. The deputy director of innovation is 37 and a half, and the assistant to deputy is 40 hours.
And what were they in the 2021 budget?
They were 35 hours. Some of them, though, we put into the unallocated line that you had asked for last year.
Right. And these are all, everyone was at 35 hours, and now all these salary changes are reflective of a change in hours, is what you're saying?
Yes. The deputy budget director was at 37 and a half, is now going to 40.
How does that reflect in the rest of the finance department? How many are working in 40-hour and 37 and a half hour work schedules?
Budget's my priority. Everybody else is 35 hours. And I've added a position in finance which will alleviate those hours.
That's the position that's set
to be the accountant.
Any other discussion on finance? Okay.
I'm struggling with it because it's a substantial cost. It's a substantial increase. I'm not sure, you know, where everybody else is with this, but again, as we drill down into the budget, some of these numbers do give me pause.
Did I say Archer?
Well, and didn't we have the same issue around changing hours? And I believe even the administration had problems with changing hours on the comptroller side. So I mean, you've got a lot of resources here. I'm not quite sure why we need to increase hours.
Not in this budget. The comptroller's office has AWS is budgeted for. We didn't touch them.
Okay, Walter.
Yeah, I mean, this comes back also to the new position that was proposed of the director of innovation. I guess I would like to be clear, like, what should we expect better and different as a result of this? Is it like you couldn't do what you were trying, you know, you couldn't do as well as you could, and therefore you need this? Or are you telling us that there's going to be some kind of added benefit that we're going to get?
I think you're going to see more transparency. You're going to see more reflections from numbers and details from departments. We really want to spend more time doing that.
I think it also comes in terms of updating the entire capital program and process. It's not just about what we publish at the end of the year, but it's about projecting a balanced six-year look, more data, definitely more data informed. But it's also trying to get towards GFOA, which is kind of the gold standard, making sure that we can fit that format exactly. So it's a climb. It's certainly a climb, and it takes time.
And is there a clawback if we don't have all that in a year?
You're establishing a 12-month calendar. Is there a clawback?
Well, I mean, you're promising like the whole different approach to the budget, and this is going to be so much more transparent. So I'm just wondering, what if you don't deliver on that?
You guys have the power of the purse and are the appropriators, so you certainly have a say in any of those matters. I would say that over the last 2 years, even during COVID, we have substantially improved the presentation and the information we disclose as part of the budget. So we are working towards there. We're becoming more familiar with ClearGov, which basically makes that a much more efficient process to get there quicker. we're still learning the program, but I think that they certainly put us in a better position to get much further down that road for next year.
Right, and that's great. I guess it doesn't support necessarily why you then need more hours. You know, you've advanced a little bit this year, and now you've got next year to advance a little bit further. Well, I guess I still don't see what, more other than just the growth of knowledge as you are with your job each year, you get a little bit better. So the budget will get a little bit better just naturally without any increase.
Well, it didn't for a number of years. For a number of years, it was the same exact format with no change and no effort to change it. So in 2 years, we have improved it. And our department has been working increased hours already. What we're saying is, in lieu of asking for and adding another position, it would just make more sense to add a few more hours to the existing positions, which is more economical in terms of getting more, using the same knowledge base, and pushing forward in that direction.
But aren't you also asking to add another position?
Yes, we're bringing back that one position, correct.
Right, so it's not in lieu of adding a position.
I'm saying to add like another fiscal analyst or something along those lines to, you know, keep this thing going in that direction. That's how we looked at it anyway.
Anybody else? Okay, thank you. County clerk, I mean, it's a small increase, but Nina, if you just want to speak to it quickly.
Sure. I'd be more than happy to. So what we've done in our office is we've reorganized our personnel, and we've looked at the positions we've had, and what we've been able to do is we have downgraded the accountant position to a junior accountant, which has saved us over $5,800. And in addition, we've downgraded the administrative assistant position to an index clerk position, saving us close to $11,000, a little over $11,000. Which is a total of about $17,000. We've been able to do this because the chief deputy of that department has been able to take on a lot of the financial responsibilities that the accountant used to do. She oversees now all of the mortgage tax distribution and apportionments, in addition to all the semi-annual releases of that money to the towns and villages in the city. She oversees the payroll and purchasing, which was done by the administrative assistant, which allows us to have grade 7 index clerk do that. And in addition, because of all these added responsibilities, we have not filled, and we do have a vacant position of an account clerk at approximately $30,000. So that does not include benefits. So we've saved $17,000 in salaries plus another vacant position plus the benefits. In addition, we're very excited. We're starting a project that we are going to take all of our records from 1685 to 1950 that are not imaged and are not available online. And we're beginning, we're approximating a 2-year project to do that. There's quite a few benefits to the county because of that, but two of the most important benefits is, one, we'll be generating probably an additional $75,000 in revenue each year that people will be searching online, and they will be paying subscription and printing fees. And in addition to that, we will be giving the county back approximately 1,400 to 1,500 square feet of prime office space, because now those record rooms will no longer have to have those large volumes, and people will be searching online. And that is a huge cost savings to the county if we can put prime office space here in the county office building, as opposed to looking at it outside of county owned property. In addition, our revenues have increased this year over 17% to date, which is approximately $400,000, and we foresee that will continue through the end of the year in the next 2 months. So because of all of the work that this individual has done and has taken on these additional responsibilities, I feel this salary adjustment is deserving. And in addition, we've saved the county quite a bit of money by doing this.
Legislator Walter, then Bartels.
Thank you. Thank you, Nina. That's exactly the kind of answer I would love to always hear, because you clearly described the changes you made, the shifts that led to having added work for this person, which would justify their added salary. You talked about the expected changes over the next year, which will be dollar amount savings that you would expect us to see. That's exactly what I. Anytime anyone is increasing a salary or I think I just want to thank you, because that's that's the kind of answers that are so helpful to us and useful. And I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Legislator Bartels.
Yes. Yeah, so thank you, Nina. And I appreciate the explanation as well, but I am still concerned about the increase. You know, as I've been looking at these 3% increases across, you know, across different departments, I've been, you know, struggling to try to understand in the absence of detailed explanation, and also to make sense of where there are compression issues, to make sense of where there are hiring and retention issues, like I'm sure we're going to hear from the county attorney. And I appreciate it when I look at the numbers of what we're paying assistant attorneys and hoping to keep them. And this is a pretty substantial raise. So one thing you mentioned that you have an account clerk. Are you getting rid of that position when you talk about a vacancy in account clerk due to this person's work? Does that mean you're removing that position, the account clerk position?
At this time, Tracy, we have not filled that position. Back in May when I submitted my budget, I wasn't certain about whether we would be able to keep that position or not. But at this point, we will have no need for that position, and we will eliminate it from our budget.
Okay. And then maybe I can ask of the administration, it says that for this position that we're talking about, there was that the department request was 96,096, and yet the executive recommended 98,987. Can someone explain why the executive recommended more?
That's
than
a 3%, right? That's a
3%. Yeah, that's correct, Nina. Yes, your request came in before the 3%.
That's a 3%.
Okay, so, but that's, okay, so, but that still was $12,000 more than the previous salary. So we're talking, you know, it's still a substantial increase. So
it's also substantial cost savings too. It's however way you want to look at it, you're spending X amount of dollars to save X amount of dollars. When you're giving up a $30,000 position plus benefits, in addition to downgrading to other positions. So it's however you want to manage your budget and how you want to manage your personnel. I've always felt that there's no need to have added personnel if we can utilize who we have on staff already and decrease that personnel. That's always been my way of operating, and I'll do that as long as I'm here. But yes, Tracy, it's two ways of looking at it, two different ways.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Mr. Archer. You're on mute.
Sorry. Hi, Nina. As I'm looking, though, at the department summary, I'm still seeing a flat. I'm not seeing a decrease in staffing. I'm seeing you still have 51 people in the department today, and you're going to have 51 next year. So
That's what we just spoke about. The fact that account clerk was budgeted back in May when I submitted my budget, but we can eliminate that position. The other positions were downgraded. I did not eliminate other positions. Accountant to junior accountant and administrative assistant to index clerk, saving us $17,000 there.
Okay, so but if you were eliminating one of the clerk positions, then it would be 50 staff and not 51, correct?
Correct. So when Tracy asked,
so this is going to get updated to 50, correct?
Correct.
Because right now it's showing you at 51 for the budget. So we would have to make a correction here.
We can, yes. Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we would need an amendment. We would need an amendment.
There'd have to be an amendment to the budget for this to be done.
Okay. However you would need to do it.
Okay. That's what I was just trying to get clarity on. I knew you were reducing and expanding responsibilities, but your budget still shows 51 staff. That's why I was trying to get it clear.
Okay.
Thank you.
Legislator Bartels.
Thank you. Is the account clerk, is that in the 1131 division? I don't see an account clerk in the 1132 division where the were the salary increases. So which is the clerk we're talking about?
Well, 1131 is administration, and the deputy that's in 1132 oversees the whole office. But in addition, she also is the deputy in the recording department. So we were able to reduce our management positions by one when she took over. We had a deputy in the recording department, and she took over that responsibility in addition to overseeing the whole entire office. So she's part of administration as well as a deputy in the recording department.
So it is the 1131 account clerk that we're talking about?
Correct, Tracy.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Anybody else? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
County attorney.
Thank you, Chairman Gavars. Good afternoon or good evening, everybody. Well, first of all, or first off, I should say, I can echo just about everything that District Attorney Clegg said with regards to getting attorneys or maintaining attorneys. For instance, this year has just been absolutely brutal on this department alone. I've lost four attorneys to higher paying jobs elsewhere. And as I've said to Legislator Bartels and I think Gavars in Laws and Rules a couple of weeks ago, it's has put so much pressure on us as attorneys down here that it's humbling to some degree. We cannot find attorneys that are willing to take the job for what we're paying them right now. As you know, District Attorney Clegg said, you look around our surrounding neighbors. I sit on the board of the New York State County Attorneys Association as a director, and I speak with Langdon Chapman all the time. I speak with my colleague Blackburn across the river. Their starting attorneys are about $80,000 at least. And it's impossible to find attorneys that want to come here. I've had one position open since June of this year that I think I may have filled last week, and she's not going to start until January. And I'm hoping that in the interim, she doesn't take a position elsewhere. And that's the one line that I have for $77,000, which is not reflected there. So all I'm asking for is just an opportunity and a chance to retain attorneys. I can tell you as a department head, I don't get overtime. I don't get comp time. I'm supposed to work 70 hours a week. My last timesheet that I just turned in was 98 hours for myself. So I am telling you that we are seriously underpaid in terms of just attorneys down here, finding attorneys to do family court, finding attorneys. We do so much in terms of the depth and breadth of what this office does that I'm not sure if everyone understands what we do down here. And a good example is we do a ton of real estate transactions. For example, DPW is in the process of acquiring about 20 pieces of property for road expansion down in New Paltz area. They at first wanted to contract with an outside agency to do the closing, which would have been about $40,000-$50,000. I said, no, we will handle that in-house. That's savings for the county. Section 75s that have gone up, the disciplinary matters, I do not sub those out to outside counsel. We do them in-house. That's savings for the county. There was one Section 75 we had 2 years ago, which was quite contentious, that we ended up paying outside counsel $35,000 for. So there is quite a bit of savings to the county and for what this department does. It's a question of finding attorneys that want to come here at a reasonable salary that we can offer to them. And that's all I'm asking for.
Questions? Okay. Have you done any kind of salary survey of the other, I mean, I hate to compare us to other counties, but if you have any of that information, if you could just forward it on to either Amber or Natalie and let them distribute it to us, that would be helpful as well.
Okay, I can definitely do that. And Chairman Gvars, you know, and again, I'm not asking for anything for myself. I'm a workaholic, I'm a civil servant, and I love what I do, and I love serving this county. Yeah, but when I look south and I see Orange County has deputies that make way more than I do. I'm just trying to give you as an example. Some of their mid-level attorneys make just about as much as I do as a county attorney here. I'm not even comparing myself to the other county attorneys. And again, I'm not asking for myself. That's not what this is about. I'm asking for just salaries that I can retain some attorneys here. It's been so hard on this office. I lost 4 attorneys. I've been operating without one attorney for 6 months now. So I'm just asking you guys to really, really give this serious thought and weight as to how we want to operate your legal department as a county.
Thank you. Public Works. Nobody's here from Public Works. Doesn't look like it. Berg, can you shed any light on this at all? Or
yeah, I will say that the deputies, they did increase their hours because their section supervisors make more than the deputies with the new union contracts. And so there's compression issues as well as the workload of DPW.
Okay. Central, so you're saying that's the same answer for all of them, correct?
Yeah, it includes the central garage too, Legislative Affairs.
Okay.
It's the 4 there, yeah.
Okay, it's a small number, but the yep. IS Assistant Director?
That is a comparison to the same title. They have 2 titles. They're both doing the same duties. So that was to put them on the same equal pay.
And this was through civil service doing?
No, these are management positions.
Got it. Okay. Emergency communications.
And I think I did speak on this. The emergency service dispatchers actually were going to make more than the deputies. So this is definitely a compression issue due to the union.
Okay. And the sheriff, I think we spoke about that earlier. Does anybody need to hear from the sheriff again, or are we good? Okay, skip over that. I think that's it. Let's say Walter.
Yeah, I'm sorry to go backwards, but, and this is to Amber also, was there anything else we were supposed to do? Because, you know, we didn't know when we had that conversation of having legislative programs here today to have the special meeting. It wasn't necessarily about that resolution alone. Is there anything else we need to be doing or talking about so that they can move forward on what they have to do?
Thank you for following up. At this point, I think that we have the legislature has time. So it's okay to not do anything more at this juncture for that. We can certainly get through the budget next week or in 2 weeks and then revisit the mission statement, key priorities and objectives, because those applications aren't due until January 31st. There's a little bit of leeway with regards to when we get the applications published and how we move forward.
Okay, great, thanks. I just didn't want to let it go.
Yeah, thank you.
Director.
Yes, thank you. I see that Chris left, so maybe Bert, you can help with this. Chris had followed up on a request regarding the Constituent Service Navigator program. And while I appreciate the data he gave us, some of that is in writing, some of it is in bar charts. We're really just trying to get our arms around the types of calls over the last year. It's showing us the COVID calls. And I see, and I'm going to assume this is correct, that the service requests, the 29,000, are not COVID related, or are they? It's not really clear. I don't have a clear picture with the data he provided, what you're taking in right now in the way of calls that are not COVID related. And we're still getting a payment for this unit. We're still getting COVID money for this unit.
Only if it's overtime.
Excuse me?
Only if it's overtime would we get reimbursed, because these are just regular staff. In terms of regular staff time, we wouldn't. Because they're from other departments. This isn't like additional staff we've put into this. These are from our own department, so we wouldn't
get reimbursed. So my question here, and what I would really like us to take a step back on this is, I'm not opposed to the concept. I'm not sure that we're clear that we have enough information to look at how we're putting this unit in place, how we're going to be leveraging new technology and a website that will be much more user friendly, and how many calls are you predicting for this unit to be taking on that would support the staff that you're proposing?
I will say that the hardest thing right now, this hasn't been advertised. The only thing, the hotline it's been advertised for COVID. That's the reason for the calls, most of them for COVID. Going forward, if this is a department or a division in IS and we advertise, we definitely would get the focus of those calls wouldn't just be for COVID, in my opinion, anyway.
Why not take do a little advertising? You still have staff that are functioning in this unit. They have the expertise so that you can start to measure what you're getting before we start adding once again staff to our overall budgets. To me, it's a way of doing this that will then lay out and say, here's what we're going to do, here's how we're going to do it, and this is what we believe we're going to get as a return on it. It doesn't make sense to me why we are staffing this up and we don't even know what's going to work or not work with this.
Did it, Walter?
Thank you, and thanks, Legislator Archer, for bringing this back up. I also am, again, Chris is not here, but he and I have had conversations about really making sure that this fulfills needs, specifically looking at things like the fact that most of these expected calls would, or many of them would be DSS related in terms of that they provide the services that most of these people would need, and whether it made more sense to have a care navigator at DSS or specifically skilled for DSS. He had talked about removing one of the managers and increasing the care navigators, but we don't have any of that in front of us. And, we're supposed to make a decision tomorrow, and we're missing that, and we're missing the sort of the whole conversation of making sure, because like Legislator Archer, I have support for the concept of this, but I want to make sure that we're really responding to what needs to happen. And I know for myself, having many constituents having trouble navigating something like social services, and the very fact that they don't have a care navigator, that mental health does. To really be very clear who needs care navigation, who doesn't, who needs this added support, who needs it at a higher level than just a basic doorway, front gate. And so I just feel like there's so much more that has to be talked about to do this right. And it gives me some concern because you are managing right now with COVID. Yes, you're pulling from other people, but like to me, that goes back to what Nina was talking about is like, that's okay. It's okay to share services. It's okay to pull from other departments to fulfill a need. There, you know, COVID crosses the lines of health and mental health and emergency services. So if you're pulling people who can help serve that I don't think that's a bad thing. And I think that, you know, this lacks the vision, the full fleshed out vision that's needed in order to support it. And it doesn't mean for me that once that vision's there, I wouldn't support it. I probably would, but I just don't feel like it's there yet. I do feel like, I mean, and I'm coming from a health perspective, we know that the most effective evidence-based practice is care navigating. But, you know, how it all looks, where you're actually holding the person's hand and finding out what they need to get to the services and everything like that. I don't know if this is going to be that. I don't know how you all see it. And I just wonder how we can move forward on it when there's so much more to not only understanding, but also the changes that Chris has already presented that, again, removing an extra manager, adding another service rep. It's not fully baked yet.
Mr. Archer.
I mean, I would like for us to really take seriously what is happening in the service industry, you know, nationwide, which is you are seeing whether it's healthcare, whether you're seeing it for staffing, if for any service provider, what you're seeing is a movement to get people to go online. If they've got a question, they can post it, there's immediate chats. And, you know, from my perspective, setting up a customer service center without all of the understanding and then starting to build that is contrary to what is happening out there today, which is I'm happy to hear they're going to be updating the county website. It is cumbersome. It is not easy to navigate to the point that Legislator Walter mentioned. People aren't sure where to go and what help and information. I know the intent of this group is that, but again, I think it's a great concept. I think we need more data and we have a group in place that we should be leveraging that experience. I mentioned from day one when that group got set up, are we tracking who has access to internet or not? I mean, we talk about all our issues here. And, you know, when you have that kind of center, both from managing your employee population and ensuring information is getting out to constituents and replies are given, it could be a win-win, but I'm hesitant to set something up without sufficient insight and understanding of what's going through there today.
Walter.
Thanks. And I guess I would encourage you, Bert and Chris and whoever, that, you know, we could conceive of taking ARP money just to support the call center further. If it's too much of a burden pulling people from others, then let's take ARP money just for 3 months or 6 months to make sure that we could have people who are supporting this, whether you're increasing their hours or doing something else. But you know, that ARP money is ideal for this. I would even be happy with, and I've talked to Chris, using ARP money to just start this process for 2 years and then use that to really build and understand what else we need. Because I know that this is Chris's part one vision and there is a part two, but you know, that leveraging the money so that, which fits exactly into this, and using that to design, take the time to design what it really needs to look at seems like the smartest way to use that money. And if I can't imagine, like, this is almost exactly what this money is supposed to do, because it's dealing with recovery, it's dealing with, you know, increase of substance abuse, it's all the things that COVID has made so much worse. including needing vaccinations still now, I feel like let's leverage that money and build upon it and use that time to flesh it out. So I really would like to encourage you to consider taking it out of the budget, out of this, making it an ARPA project. And that can cover you for 2 years at a basic level and do what exactly Legislator Archer is saying. Start your 311, 411, we get a sense of how much the need is. And I imagine there are return on investments by helping people who are not showing up in the emergency room as a result, people who are not getting incarcerated as a result or not, you know, and so I'm sure there's a return on investment, but let's use the ARPA money to assess, to get it started and assess that.
Anybody else? All right, just a reminder, we have a meeting tomorrow at 4:00. Nothing else, I'll ask for a motion to adjourn. Mr. Archer, second. Bartels, all those in favor? Opposed? So carried. Thank you.
Thank you.